Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Earlier in the day, Andrew Berry, the general manager of the Browns, had his press conference and kind of his pre-draft. Hey, folks, get it out now because I'm going into even more of a bunker and getting ready for the draft. And Tom Withers took part in that, and he joins us right now on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Good afternoon, Tom.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Doing all right. You and your family, safe, well, good?
Yeah, we're doing fine here. It's been, I don't have to tell you guys, this has been some strange times. So as we talked about a few weeks ago, I still hold my breath every time I get a phone call from family and friends back in New York. You know, Long Island has become kind of a real hot spot here with this virus. So that still got me a little anxious, as everyone is. I mean, we all have, you know, friends around the country and stuff, and everybody's kind of dealing with their own thing here. But thankfully, you know, the family here is all healthy and just trying to ride it out and do the best we can, just like everyone is.
Hey, Tom, what was your biggest takeaway from this morning from the teleconference?
I guess that they are not worried about anything, you know, surprising them in the draft in terms of, you know, what's going to be the most unique draft, obviously, in NFL history. You know, I think Andrew Berry, who is armed with degrees in economics and computer science, feels like he could handle any of the technological issues. It just seems to me like they are as well prepared as a team could possibly be for this draft. You know, obviously, guys, we're very well aware of all the obstacles here, but beyond just your wireless connection and all those bandwidth and all those kinds of things that could pop up, you know, the fact that they're not able to have medical information on some of these guys and things like that. But Berry seems to feel like they've got things in order, that they're going to go through a couple of dress rehearsals. And it's just going to be a matter of execution when we get to the 23rd.
Tom, one thing that stood out to us, also stood out to you, you put it up on Twitter. He said the distinction between a left tackle and a right tackle, overrated, outdated, tackles are tackles. And I thought, okay, well, maybe we should get used to the names of Wills and Wirfs, where the two names we've really been thinking about have been Thomas and Becton. Did you feel the same way?
I do. And I'll be honest with you guys, and in talking to coaches, especially in the last, 5 to 10 years, that's always been my takeaway, that these guys, you know, they look at these guys as, you know, first of all, unbelievable talents, you know, anybody that you would consider in the first or second round, and players that are adaptable and can be changed and don't necessarily have to be, you know, pigeonholed into a specific spot. You know, I always feel the same way about when I hear questions asked about, are they playing a 3-4 or a 4-3? You're playing defense. It doesn't really – sure. I mean, are there physical attributes that you would like to have in a defensive end versus defensive tackle, et cetera? But at the end of the day, it's about blocking the guy in front of you and tackling the guy with the ball. So I think a lot of times we as media and fans get caught up in that trap of, oh, he's only a left tackle or he's only a right tackle. These guys are professional athletes. They can adjust, and you would hope at that level – they have the coaches that can help them adjust.
Tom, I want the truthometer on this question, okay? Because Andrew brought this brought this up in the beginning when the question of a player being under the Dorsey regime or any other regime.
They're all on the roster, right?
They're all – I got to tell you, it's a breath of fresh air if it's true. I hope it's true. I hope that he's evaluating players based on their ability to play football no matter who brought them in. So what's the truthometer on this? Have we heard this before from other general managers, or it's always just that feeling, well, that guy was he was a homegrown guy, and I that drives me crazy. I hate that because if you let a player go, it shouldn't be because of who brought them in. It should be because they can't play football.
No, and again, and I'll point the finger at us as media members and as fans as well, that we kind of jump to that conclusion, though, don't we, guys? That we look at the roster and say, so-and-so, like you said, you know, drafted him in 2014, so he can't be part of the future plan. It's very refreshing to hear that from Andrew Berry. And we also have to keep in mind, guys, that this is a, you know, a general manager who's been an executive on this team before. So he's coming into it with, you know, a very different perspective than any of the general managers or football executives that we've talked to, maybe save, you know, Phil Savage, who had had, you know, some time here, but that was also in the past. So I agree with you, Andy. I think it was refreshing to hear that in their minds, everyone has a clean slate and we're going to be able to evaluate these guys. Now, as you know, the problem now is now with really no off season to speak of, it's going to be difficult to evaluate these guys. So you're having to make decisions now without, you know, the benefit of having somebody on the practice field to see what they're really about, and you're just going on game tape. So, but I agree with you, Andy. I thought it was a nice, refreshing approach to hear it that way from somebody at 76 Lou Groza Boulevard.
Tom Withers joining us from the Associated Press. Tom, one thing that we've learned about Andrew Berry, I think he's been systematic, methodical,
yep,
realistic, sensible in his approach to free agency. I find it not weird or anything, but he hasn't made a trade yet. I wonder what he views the value of an NFL trade as being. John Dorsey embraced them. Howie Roseman, who he worked with in Philadelphia, embraced trades. I wonder if that's rubbed off on Andrew or if he's more of a build through the draft and occasional free agent guy.
That's a great point, Jeff. I think it's probably the latter. I think it's more of that approach that, you know, this is going to take some time. We've heard, you know, some of this, not a ton of it publicly, but we've heard a real kind of a patient approach mentality from both Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski. I think they realize what they're up against, that this is going to be, you know, several free agencies and at least a couple of drafts to get them where they really want to be, which is a Super Bowl contender. I mean, you know, listen, we all hope that they get back to where we all thought they should have been last year, which was a 9-7, 10-6 team, however you want to look at it, and back in the playoffs. But, you know, they seem to be taking the sensible approach here. And again, refreshing to hear that as well. And I do think, Jeff, that we will see some trades, but I think, as you pointed out before, I think it's going to be more about let's acquire talent that we feel best about. And that's in guys that we've been out and we've been watching, you know, throughout their college careers, or that we know from playing them within our division or whatever the case may be. So I think you're going to see a lot more of that than the Trader John situation that we had with Dorsey.
Tom, what was your take on Jadeveon Clowney, the answer that he gave on that too? Because I thought, I'm like, you know what? He didn't say, he said what a general manager should say. I'm not going to say his name. I'm not going to point this out. But he didn't say that they weren't in the mix on that, or even, and Trent Williams, too, along those lines, too. Like, I really wonder what he's thinking.
Well, this is kind of what drives me crazy, too, as well, guys. And listen, we all get caught up in this, once again, as media members and fans. A general manager's job is to look at the free agents that are available and decide whether or not they're a fit here or not. Of course they've kicked the tires on Jadeveon Clowney. He's the number one free agent that's still available on the market. Of course they've thought about whether or not he fits with them financially and how that would impact Olivier Vernon and Myles Garrett, et cetera. He's not doing his job if he's not. Now, in terms of how close they got on making him an offer, what I've continued to hear from the people in Seattle is that part of what happened with the Clowney situation is that's Clowney's agents that have been driving up the price so the Seahawks finally meet them at the magic number that they want in the negotiating table. So, listen, as you said, Andy, I think Andrew said all that he could say without saying anything. But, of course, they've been interested in Jadeveon Clowney. If you're not interested in Jadeveon Clowney, you're not doing your job as an NFL general manager.
Tom, is there any way, and I'm really looking down the road here, anyway, Clowney ends up here and Olivier Vernon is also here? And that's assuming, let's just say Clowney's a Brown.
Yeah, that would be tough. That would take, I would think, Jeff, a major restructuring of that Vernon contract. And I don't see him taking a pay cut from what it's supposed to be, $15 million a year, down to, you know, a more suitable number. Now, that's not to say, though, that, you know, they can't find a way to make it work to have both guys here. And wouldn't that be something? I mean, when you think about a rotation potentially with all those guys involved, I think the one thing that has surprised me, Jeff, is that we are still – a little bit uncertain as to Vernon and his future here in Cleveland. You know, I thought by now that we would have either heard about either a restructuring or a release, and neither of those things had happened yet. But, you know, we still have a couple more weeks for the draft, and, you know, you talk about a trade, you know, potentially that's something that we could be looking at with him as well.
Tom, I just want you to know that I just put a tattoo on my leg, and the tattoo says, Cleveland Indians, Cactus League, West Champions. I feel really good about it. What are your thoughts on baseball and even that plan that was out there today about, you know, letting the Florida team stay in Florida, letting the Arizona team stay in Arizona to play out some sort of a regular season?
Yeah, gee, the plan that came out last week to me was just beyond far-fetched. And listen, MLB has got to come up with some kind of contingency plans and to start to look forward here. But I think Adam Silver is probably the one executive who has said it best over the last couple of weeks is just that, hey, until we get to May 1st, it's just nonsensical to throw anything out right now, because until we have, you know, a better nationwide system of testing, there is no way that we can move forward or move back towards, you know, what we all remember as normalcy in terms of anything. I mean, the fact that, you know, there are 325 million people in the United States and around 1% of the population has even been tested for the virus leads me to believe that we still got a long way to go here. So I do applaud MLB in that they are at least, you know, presenting some hope, and the fact that we all want to get there, and the sooner the better for all of us and our sanity. But I think we also have some major obstacles to overcome. And as I brought it up before, in terms of New York, you know, I think about all the headquarters for all of these organizations are back there, and they are dealing with a very different reality in this virus than we are here in Ohio. And we've been very lucky in Ohio in that, you know, the guidelines that been put out by the health officials and Governor DeWine and company have been spot on from the beginning in terms of social distancing and things like that. So I think we're all looking for that day that we all get back into ballparks and stuff, but I just don't see it happening in the near future. That's not to say, though, that, you know, once we get to June and July that things can't start to move in the right direction, but right now I think it's all very premature.
Tom Withers is joining us from the Associated Press. Rather than ask you another sports question, I need to get to the bottom of this story, all right? On your Twitter account, there are two pictures. One is you from the 2010 Olympics in front of, looks like a luge run, right?
Correct.
Nice picture. And the other I've looked at for some time, and I've thought, man, I have to ask Tom about that. So I'm going to ask Tom about that. There's a young Tom Withers.
There it is.
Sitting on the left side of a young Michael Jordan in a gym.
Right.
What's the story?
With a young Mike Krzyzewski looking over our shoulders, if you
That's
notice
what
in the background.
I thought
yeah.
That was Coach K, but
Coach
he's so
K.
small
Isn't
in the picture, I couldn't tell.
So, yeah, so I was so lucky, you guys. Early in my career, I was blessed to be able to cover the Dream Team in Barcelona. And, I mean, you know, the greatest collection of basketball talent that has ever been assembled and will ever be assembled. I mean, when you think about, you know, Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, and Larry Bird on the same team, I mean, and beyond Karl Malone and John Stockton and right on down the line, Charles Barkley, David Robinson, I mean, you could go on. But, yeah, I was fortunate enough to be there. And so the Dream Team held one practice. And at the end of the practice, Michael Jordan was sitting down on the bench, and I walked over with a couple of other reporters, and I decided to sit down right next to him. And then that photo was on the front page of one of the Barcelona papers the next day.
Nice.
And interestingly enough, I had gone down to get some lunch at the concession stands with Bob Ryan from the Boston Globe. And as we're standing there waiting for our sandwich and our soda, the kid behind the counter is pointing at me and he's saying, Michael Jordan, Michael Jordan. And Bob and I are looking at each other. And I'm like, well, he's got me mistaken for one of the greatest players of all time, but so be it. And then he comes from behind the counter and he's got a copy of the newspaper. Well, needless to say, I went immediately to the kiosk and bought about 20 copies of the paper. So yeah, talk about what a great memento to come home with, right? A picture of myself and Michael Jordan and Mike Krzyzewski.
Yeah, I couldn't
wow,
tell
that's
that was
awesome.
Krzyzewski. I looked at that, Tom, and I thought, that looks like Coach K, but it's blurry enough, and he's far enough in the background, I can't really tell.
Yeah, isn't that something?
What a great story.
Yeah, that's a great story. Hey, can I?
Is that your best momentum piece that you own, your favorite?
From the Olympics, that's pretty close. You know what? I was also lucky enough at those same Olympics, guys, that I was myself and a couple of the other media members actually bought the Lithuanian Grateful Dead tie-dyed T-shirts from the team that they wore medal ceremony. You remember they won the bronze medal over there. And so before those became a popular item here, I think they were sold on, not online, but I think Rolling Stone magazine and some others had then, you know, made some copies of it. But I've got an original from 1992 that I have framed in my office.
Wow.
That's pretty cool.
Let me ask you one thing about Jordan, and you had a chance to cover him there. I had the opportunity when he was in his heyday and beating up the Cavs and, you know, knocking out a Cavs team on the shot and everything else. I was so impressed by him, Tom, as a guy who knew how to deal with the media. Because
that's
I remember
great.
Walking into the Coliseum, and the Bulls had had a practice on the Coliseum main floor, and we walk in, and Michael, I saw him take like two steps and sit down in one of those big courtside seats back at the Coliseum in the day, and he just sat there, and he waited for all of us to come over.
Yeah.
We all came over. He waited until everybody was done, and then he got up and left. I one time at an All-Star game in Houston, and it was weird because now the All-Star games are just a zoo, but I was in the locker room, and nobody else is really in the locker room. And I'm getting one-on-ones. It was with McHale and all these guys. And Michael's standing there by himself. And I went over and I started asking him about the Cavs. And he looked at me kind of funny. I said, yeah, I'm from Cleveland. And he sat there and he answered every question I had for him. And it was just the two of us. And I always thought, now that guy gets it.
Yeah.
And LeBron followed suit, and so did Kobe. But, man, I think Jordan was just brilliant when it came to the way he handled himself.
That's such a good call. And you're making me nostalgic for the old days, right, where, we had better access as media members and players were – listen, it's you can blame social media or whatever you want or people being burned by media members. But, yeah, there was a time when these guys would really open up to you and everybody was approachable and there wasn't – there wasn't a media relations member from the team standing guard and turning you away or saying that, Mr. Jordan is off limits right now or anything like that. Those were great times. And I was really lucky, being based in New York, guys like, Patrick Ewing and Derek Jeter and Andy Pettit and Mariano Rivera and players like that who have become, they're bona fide Hall of Famers were always, willing to talk to the media and open to the media. And I can remember, I'm lucky to have Terry Francona here, who's very media savvy. And we used to sit in Joe Torre's office, you guys, for an hour and just talking baseball. Yeah. And, I miss those days. And I know it's a very different world right now, but you're right, Jeff. Jordan was unique in that respect. And he understood the media and he knew how to make the media work for him. Not too dissimilar, like you said, from what Kobe does and what LeBron does now.
Yeah. Tom, thank you very much for your time today.
Hey, just real quick story here. Tom, you want to put that in perspective? Hal Leibovitz, when he was working here in Cleveland in 1957, and this story always blew me away, got yelled at by his editor because he had to make a choice between covering the game or going in the ambulance with Herb Score after
hit
the face.
Is that right?
Think about that one. Yes. To me, that's always one of the amazing stories of Cleveland sports, the fact that Hal was in the ambulance with Herb.
Wow. There's some detail you're not going to get, right?
Isn't that
I can
there
remember Dave Anderson. I don't know if you guys remember him from the New York Times.
Yeah.
Telling us that they could basically walk when he was covering the New York Jets, during the late 60s and then their Super Bowl championship year. He can remember walking up and being able to listen into what Namath was calling in the huddle. So you want to talk about the difference in access now. You might be taken down by a sniper if you get anywhere close to an NFL huddle now during a practice.
Tom, thank you, bud.
Anytime, boys.
Thanks,
stay healthy, stay positive. We'll talk to you soon.
You got it. Tom Withers, the Associated Press, and Andy?
It's not news until Tom Withers says so.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.